welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 33.
This is the good part. See,
it's hard to coordinate the good part with the part, but that's a good part. All right, that song is Monster by the Automatic. They're from Cardiff.
Oh, man, that's Welsh.
Yeah.
They're a Welsh band.
I'm Chuck Warner. With me, as always, is Dave Stern. This is I'm Trying to Think. We're a podcast. You should know that.
Yeah, I feel like if people are listening, they've probably picked up the whole podcast thing.
I don't know why. I just identify us all the time as a podcast. We're sponsored by the Foundation Institute, and you can look at them at foundation-institute.org. Our website is at imtryingtothink.com, but again, you probably know that because you're listening to it. So you got it somehow, unless your friend is giving you a crazy podcast to listen to and not telling you where they came from. In which case, I mean, you know, thank your friend, because at least you got us. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/imtryingtothink, and you become a fan on Facebook by looking for us. It's not that hard. Is there anything else you'd like? Oh, I wanted to talk about the cake delivery, or the cake delivery system that we're now sponsoring.
Sure.
Which is... that
people got to know.
You deliver a cake to us. You can do it with the mail or you can do it in person. And you can get involved in the cake delivery system by emailing us at contact@imtryingtothink.com. And so that takes care of things really nicely.
Yep. I think that's covered. I like cake.
Yeah. I want to congratulate you, Dave. Good job knowing that Cardiff is in Wales.
Hey, I know my Wales.
You know, your humpback, your blue. Yeah.
Sperm killer.
The sperm killer whale is not, you don't want to tussle with him. Because they're very direct. They live up to their name and they're very direct, if you know what I mean.
I don't.
You don't want to know what
I
mean. Well,
I know what you mean, but I don't want to think about it too much. By the way, look for a new podcast coming out in a couple weeks called I Don't Want to Think About It.
That would be a good side podcast to do on the weeks when we're not doing I'm Trying to Think. We could do I Don't Want to Think About It, which would be, no one would listen to it because we're going to talk.
It'd just be unpleasant. We'd go to some dark places.
Some very awful
Cardiff
things.
Not only do I know about that, but you know, I know about several fine Welsh bands. You know, there's lots of good Welsh bands out there to listen to.
I don't.
Oh, man, there's a...
I only kind of knew that the Automatic were Welsh. And I don't know that anybody aside from me has heard of them.
Yeah, I certainly hadn't.
There you go.
But I will say there's Los Campesinos, our fine
That doesn't
Welsh
sound like
band.
Welsh.
No. But go figure.
There you go.
There are a bunch of, you know, people from Wales.
I want to clarify something really quickly,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, go for it.
When I say something like, I don't think anybody else has ever heard of them, I don't wear that as a badge of pride, just so everybody knows. I kind of wear that as a badge of shame because most of the bands that I listen to that no one has ever heard of, no one ever wants to hear about again.
They're obscure for good reason.
They're obscure for a very good reason.
Justifiably obscure.
Justifiably obscure. So, yeah, what are other Welsh bands?
Oh, there's a great...
do any of them have names that sound very Welsh so that no one will understand what you're saying when you go?
No, I wish. Maybe Lundflorn. No, I'm just making that up.
You made
That's
that
bullshit,
up.
Yeah. I don't know, McCluskey was a good one, and then they broke up, and the guy who was their singer formed a different band called Future of the Left, and those are both worth checking out.
Oh.
You'd like McCluskey, actually, because I'll just tell you their general vibe is like... And actually, Los Campesinos to a certain extent also, but McCluskey especially was just like ridiculous over-sarcasm. Like, just...
You know I like over-sarcasm.
Off the top of my head.
Actually, Dave...
Yeah.
I don't like over-sarcasm.
Oh, there you go.
What are you talking about? But speaking about the future of the left, let's talk about the past of the left.
Sure.
Because today...
That's a segue.
You're listening to this, who knows? It could be May 8th, it could be December 27th, you don't know. Well, you know, I don't know.
But we're recording
today
this
Today is May 1st.
May Day.
May Day, which is a day known... I mean, there's pagan roots to it, but... It's known mostly for being like a labor holiday.
Yeah, in most of Europe, they don't have their Labor Day
right
in August or September
or
whatever
we
have
it. Yeah, we're not good with holidays. So May Day, in many countries, is the celebration of the 8-hour working day. And being a guy in 2010, I kind of want to talk to those people from the late 19th century and say, couldn't you have gone with 6 hours? You sure you couldn't have squeezed it down to 6? Because people in my generation, we've completely swallowed the 8-hour workday. We're not gonna ask for any more. No one's out there rallying for a 6-hour workday. But I actually think that might be the solution to our economic woes. Imagine how much unemployment would go down if there was only a 6-hour workday.
I said, because you would free up a lot of hours that someone else would have to pick up.
Somebody else is going to have to work those hours.
And you'd stagger those hours.
Yeah. So you got to hire more employees because...
Hey, I'm going to throw this out there then.
Yeah.
2-hour workday. 2-hour workday. Employment has to quadruple. Solved.
Even me being like a super liberal leftist, I don't know, I'm so far left, I'm behind myself. It's true.
Around the world?
I've gone 180. I'm abutting the crazy conservatives now. If I go any further, I'm going to, like, I don't know, kill an abortion doctor. That wasn't nice. Why'd I go there?
I don't know. But
this is a funny show, not a show about killing abortion doctors. That's not funny. I mean, unless it's like a clown killing an abortion doctor.
No, that's less funny.
You think that's less funny?
Yeah, clowns make things less funny, generally. You know?
I don't know.
That's kind of the first rule of clowning.
I don't know. Not to bring us back to a topic that we covered very thoroughly, but I think the fact that the Insane Clown Posse are dressed up as clowns, or wear clown makeup, makes that music video even funnier. Because they're completely ignorant buffoons.
Who are literally clowns. Okay, I guess clowns doing funny things.
That's not funny.
Yeah, clowns doing funny things isn't funny.
Clowns doing horrific things is funny.
No, clowns doing horrific things is just horrific. I think clowns taking themselves very seriously is to a certain degree funny.
Okay.
Like, there's a little middle ground, because, you know, scary clowns are more scary than funny. Well, it depends on the person. I don't know.
Yeah, it probably depends on your psychology. I find scary clowns funny.
I mostly just find scary clowns boring.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I try to ratchet it up so I make them into funny.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, 6-hour workday. More employed people. They have to pay us the same, obviously. I'm not taking a pay cut. If you think I'm taking a pay cut just because I'm not only working 6 hours, you're crazy.
Yeah. Just because I'm doing less work doesn't mean I should be paid less. In fact, I should be paid more.
Here's the situation we live in. You know, 1% of the population in our country has more money than the other 99%, you know, combined. All the wealth is very stratified. There is no middle class, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Sure.
If we're getting screwed by the people in the upper social classes anyway, 6-hour workday. F you guys, you know what I'm saying? I'll tell you what, I'll slave away another 30 years in your little salt mines and your fucking grindstones, but I'm only doing it 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. I'm starting a movement.
So you're kind of being the new labor? I feel like it's hard for modern labor to get motivated, because the oppression is so much more banal.
Well, yeah, it's...
Like, when you look at, you know, the things that really jump-started the original, you know, labor movements that are celebrated in May Day, it's because that was, like, cartoon...
Yeah, like, robber bands. Yeah, twirling, like waxing their mustaches, like, yeah.
Fucking just evil...
Really evil people.
Abusive, insane stuff. Whereas now it's just banal, so you have
it's
to just... Start,
yeah, it is. So it's bread and circuses.
You have to start the labor revolution against just banal working conditions.
You gotta start the labor revolution against the fact is like, it's sort of like, why are we OSHA even doing for this excitement anymore?
They need to have an OSHA for excitement.
That's true.
Like, we're just workplaces need to be this certain amount of awesome.
I think they might move in that direction anyway, because you find a lot of modern companies kind of do a thing where they're very, you know, have nicer places. Like, your Googles and your other places like that, you're like, really up-and-coming, trying-to-be-hip kind of companies have their pool tables and their video game rock band rooms and stuff, you know?
Yep. And then whatever bubble they're part of collapses, and you can get so many cheap Aeron shares.
Yeah, then you can really...
That's
yeah,
always
exactly.
nice.
Those are the big black ones with the metal frames, silver metal frames.
No, those are the ones I'm pretty sure that... I feel like... I don't even remember. I feel like Aeron chairs are very mesh-oriented.
I don't know.
I feel like it's like you're being supported by the air.
I just want to know the
Man,
names of the ones
you're
that are...
in front of a computer that's not, you know,
yeah, but
causing
type
this podcast
and everybody
to
hear this, like... Nobody wants to hear
okay,
that.
Well, now that you're already, like, punching the keyboard to make a point, why don't you just punch an Aeron chair?
I don't know. How do you spell Aeron? A-E-R-O-N?
Yeah, like aeroplane.
Chair. Oh, look, it comes up in the Google search even. All right. Yeah, you've got some meshy things going there. I see. Well, I want to know what the chairs are that are big and black and cushy but have the metal silver frame that goes around them.
Are you talking about, like, the kind of boxy? Like...
Yeah, they're like boxes. They're like cubes almost, but the
oh,
seat cut up.
I gotcha.
What do you got?
They are Le Corbusier.
Corbusier?
No,
holy
Le
shit.
Corbusier is the architect who designed those chairs. C-O-U.
Ooh, Corbusier. That's Corbusier, Dave.
Yeah.
That's Corbusier.
And you're looking at that image?
Yeah.
That's those chairs.
That is those chairs. He's an old dude.
Yeah, yeah, he's old and French and mid-century. Those are painfully, like, modernist mid-century furniture.
Yeah, I do like them. Well,
I feel like that's not an office setting. That's like an office waiting room. That's a
yeah,
waiting room.
I'll buy them from the waiting room. I don't care. If your company's going out of business and you have Le Corbusier chairs, I will buy them. Corbusier. Le Corbusier.
You know, I'm surprised you never just stole them from where we went to college.
Yeah, they're really heavy. I mean, I've moved them
several
times.
Point.
Like, just a couple inches, and that was enough. I'm not going to... carry off a whole set. But anyways, happy May Day. Seriously, come on. 8 hours? Why? Let's face it, we're in a gold-bricking economy anyways. Most of you are checking your email and pissing around for 2 to 7 hours a day. So why don't we just cut it? Just cut the hours. That's what I say. And that's been a message from Chuck. Labor organizer of the lazy. Gold bricking is almost like a religion for some people, and I don't see why it shouldn't be. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment with more I'm Trying to Think. Comes Dave. You say what? When I say
okay, yeah,
okay,
what comes?
Here comes Dave.
What?
More. I'm trying to think. Episode 33. I'm Chuck Warner. This is
yeah, I'm
Dave.
Not sure, I'm not sure if the what really added a lot to the whole
here
thing.
It comes, Dave. You could say who. Here they come, Dave.
Okay, then I would say who, because that's...
Yeah, all right. Let's try. Okay, let's go with okay. that. Here they come, Dave.
Who?
The... Hold on, one more time. Here they come, Dave.
Who?
The I'm trying to think, guys. Team.
Us?
I'm episode 33. I'm Chuck Warner, and this is Dave Stern. That's you, Dave. All right, Dave. Etiquette question. I know normally this goes the other way, but this isn't even an etiquette question. It's just
a question.
It's a question about how I should live my life from here.
Okay, so you're a lifestyle ready. Question.
A lifestyle question.
Yeah, I'm always open. I'm always ears. You know, if you come to me with a problem, I'll solve it. Check out the hook
and DJ resolves it,
et cetera. Yeah.
I think so. All right, so let's say you got this person in your life, right? And you just completely disagree with every stance they have. Every political idea they have, the teams they like, everything, right?
Okay, so is this specifically just political stuff or political, personal, just 100% oppositional to this person and everything
like,
they stand
personal.
For?
Personal. Okay, let me go over it. Let's just make some theoretical stances up, because this is all just, you know, hypothetical.
A theory.
Let's say the person is, like, anti-immigration, you know, is, like, a super Christian and listens to Christian music, like Christian rock, right? Likes the Browns, you know, football organization.
The Cleveland Football Browns. The Cleveland
Football Browns. You know, hates Obama.
We already talked from the immigration stuff. She's not, like, a fan of the Browns.
She, he, it is,
okay, yeah, she, he, it, I don't
know. I'm not gonna specify.
I'm assuming she, because, I don't know why.
Because you're sexist.
Probably.
Against, I don't know, she's. Anyways, hates Obama.
My,
you know,
she gymnastic.
Thinks, I don't know. Anyways, so this person is in your life, right? And is some sort of, you could easily cut them out of your life because you never have to see them. In fact, you never do see them. Like, you don't interact with
this,
the person in person.
Is this a Facebook thing?
Not quite.
It's a Facebook thing.
It's an email thing. Like, if they email you, let's say, right? Let's say you just knew this person at one point. You had personal interactions with them on, like, a semi-daily basis or something. And then, they, like, afterwards, they email you still. Kind of like, almost as if they were keeping in touch, but they just email you stupid forwards. Okay? And not the stupid forwards that are like, if you forward this, you win $1 million, or here's a funny joke that I think is funny.
No, the ones that are like, here's a funny joke that I think is funny and is racist.
Not even. Like,
but not even the funny racist jokes?
Yeah. This is the latest, thing, all right, in the hypothetical situation that I'm hypothetically in, right?
Hypothetically, yeah.
You get an email that's like, oh, immigrants, if you do the math, since they don't pay taxes, illegal immigrants don't pay taxes, they make more money than Americans who work, you know, a normal job. Which is completely bullshit. There's almost no mathematical way that that could happen. You're talking about illegal immigrants who don't even speak the language in most cases, are not educated, you know, in most cases, and somehow they figured out a loophole in the system? What the, you know, come on. I mean, that's just not even...
Well, I mean, I feel like in general, and I mean, it, you know, there are exceptions, I'm sure, but the forced low profile of the jobs they take and the fact that they are often, you know, because it's under the table, paid sub-minimum wage substantially,
yeah,
somewhat cancels out the fact that they're not paying an income tax.
Well, the point is you can write an email that says whatever you want and make
That's
up
true,
fun numbers
yeah.
that you think are accurate, and who cares, right?
I mean,
and
this person was this
probably
citing
didn't make
a lot?
Them up.
Was
oh,
this
God,
citing
no.
a lot of things?
No, there was nothing cited. it was just like a bunch of numbers on a page and like, see, this is blah-bitty-blah, right? So, but you have two choices, right? You can just cut this person off, or you can continue to receive their emails and get a little angry, but in the long run, kind of smile and smirk after a couple days go by because you realize, like, that you sent them all this debunking shit because you got mad and looked up facts, and you just completely ripped their email to shreds, and then you were like, for instance, let's say that in this hypothetical situation, you were like, you know what? If illegal immigrants have it better than hardworking Americans, let's go become illegal immigrants. You go, you know, you go first. You can go to the Home Depot, stand around outside it, see if somebody will pick you up and hire you for day work, and we'll see how your life turns out. And then, you know, a couple days later, you were angry at first, right? Hypothetically.
Yeah, theoretically.
And theoretically. And then a couple days later, you kind of feel smug because you're like, you know what? I was angry at first, but in the long run, I just stuck it to them, right? Now, here's the question. The crux, if you will. Is it better to just cut this person out and avoid the negative, you know, energy, if you will? The negative interaction of having to read these emails at all? Or is it better to keep them, you know, keep that email flowing in when it does and just rip them a new asshole? And then, you know, even if smugness aside, just to keep up your chops about your own political opinions or your personal opinions or metaphysical opinions. Am I a bad person for, like, using this hypothetical? Am I a hypothetically bad person?
As basically kind of a punching bag?
As a punching bag, yeah.
Well, I think the punching bag thing is almost irrelevant, and...
Well, their feelings are pretty irrelevant because they never show any actual sign of digesting any of the stuff I'm saying.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're not going to change an opinion. This is just you throwing stuff out. Basically, I would say the way to judge this, pretty much, is, you know, divorce it from the politics. The politics of the whole situation completely irrelevant. You know, just go pure Benthamite, you know, pig utilitarianism. It's really simple, you know. Is the negative that this has brought into your life with anger versus, you know, take that, weigh it against the positive you get from the smugness, whichever is bigger, discard or keep doing it. See, you know, this is pure pig utilitarianism.
This is the kicker, and it may be because, people, to use a fairly negative term, I'm kind of a navel gazer, and, I'm very introspective. I think a lot about my own thoughts and ideas, and I think that's good, but it makes it, the kind of utilitarian calculus, extremely difficult. Because you're absolutely certain you've not considered all the factors. And, you know, I don't know. Like, what else would I be doing with that time that I spent writing to them?
Yeah, opportunity. How long do I feel
smug? What's the smug value versus the upset value?
Yeah, this stuff is why utilitarianism is a surprisingly complex
system. It's a very simple premise, but it's a very difficult implementation. Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I think that's... I don't think that anyone has yet
come up
truly
with a really compelling pleasure calculus.
I don't think that anyone's come up with a compelling reason that utilitarianism isn't what we're doing all the time. But the question, the complexity of it is the whole crux of the issue. But I do not see how we are not in almost everything we do, both in government, like politics, and in our personal lives, trying to maximize certain calculations of happiness to, you know, within reason, within certain, limitations. I mean, but we all impose our own limitations on ourselves. Some people won't make fun of a person to make themselves feel better. I might.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's sort of a core of utilitarianism in sort of the everyday. Because, I mean, let's be honest, most people don't have, you know, even people like us who think about it and try.
Yeah.
Most people don't ultimately use, you know, a well-reasoned, coherent moral system.
It's impossible.
Or ethical system. You just, you know, you go by your common sense thing. And
there are plenty of people who
what
think
I would say common sense morality looks like, ultimately, and I think this is what you were driving at, is pretty much something vaguely utilitarian-ish, but with whatever, you know, deontological constraints you want to slap
on. It's just kind of like the utilitarian...
it's utilitarian plus your hard, fast rules.
Utilitarian whatever those may calculus be. Is always in effect. But here's the kicker, all right? People will always revert to utilitarianism when their a priori moral conceptions don't either fit the bill or cannot be applied reasonably to a situation. Like, let's just take the easy one, right? The literal Hebrew translation of the Ten Commandments most often comes out, "Thou shalt not kill." Right?
Yeah.
Often this is turned in newer versions, and especially in people's interpretations of that commandment, to "thou shalt not murder." It's a different thing.
Yeah.
And it's far more useful in the justification of a lot of actions if you say murder instead of kill.
Because murder is a much more flexible word.
Murder is a very flexible word.
Whereas kill is relatively cut and dry.
Kill is a broad word. And some people, I mean, there's a whole host of situations where you get into a goofy problem of like, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but this will give our audience a nice little education level. Boo, 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 the more you know. There's this old logic problem, kind of, right? There are three guys out in the desert, let's say, right?
Is one of them a fox, one of them a duck, and one of them a bag of rice?
No, they're all guys.
Okay, so it's a different logic problem.
Different logic problem. It's not a logic problem. It's just it's more of a moral question.
Okay, it's a quandary.
It's a quandary. There's one guy, and he's an asshole, right? There's another guy, They're probably all three assholes, but let's just, for the sake of argument, say there's one huge asshole. Anyways, the other two people really don't like him. One guy has a vial of poison, the other guy has a gun. The guy with the vial of poison poisons his soup. The asshole, the super asshole, as he goes to drink his soup, the other guy shoots him with a gun. Is the guy who poisoned the soup guilty of murder? Certainly guilty of intent, but before his plan could be carried out, something else happened. How is he less culpable for murder than the guy who just got the opportunity first?
Well, I would say from a legal system
standpoint, legal system, whole other situation.
There's, I would say the distinction there would be murder and attempted murder.
Exactly.
Because, you know, one of them was just more successful. But let's not
talk about, and, I mean, even that's a good question. Why is there a difference?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same question that's often brought up about hate crimes, and I think it's a valid question. What's the difference why you kill a person? You're killing them not for a good reason. I mean, if you're killing a person because they're black, is that better or worse than killing them because you don't like them? Or killing them because they slept with your wife? It's a good question. I, on the other hand, feel like there is maybe a distinction to be made there because of certain historical factors and cultural
threats
factors.
Against groups, et cetera, right. et cetera. But moving on to, we're
just talking about the morality of the situation. Example. Yeah, but you can move back the example and move back even further to say the idea there is, you know, the question of what killing is becomes an issue for discussion. And as soon as there's an issue for discussion, as soon as your a priori moral laws cannot be applied universally or directly to a situation, you have to go back to some form of moral calculus. And you're always going to think about who benefits, what the best thing for society is. You're going to weigh values, and that's utilitarian calculus.
Also, I feel like, you know, you said moral calculus. I feel like, because I believe this was the original Benthamite term, and I prefer using it because, to me, it sounds a little bit saucier, which I like. Saucy. It's the pleasure calculus.
Pleasure calculus is fine.
That's got to be like, is that like in the top five of philosophical terms that sound a little bit like they're a little bit sexy?
A little bit sexy. I don't know. That's got to be top one. I can't think of another. I mean, if you get into sexual theory and gender theory and stuff, you're going to hear a lot more sexy
stuff. Yeah, but I just mean, you
know, like continental philosophy.
More general philosophy.
General philosophy.
Yeah, not picking the low-hanging fruit.
Right.
You can read Foucault's Discipline and Punish and be like, oh, that's a little sexual.
That's a little sexual, but it is. Yeah, it is pretty sexual. I think pleasure principle is good, too.
Yeah.
Do you like pleasure principle or pleasure calculus better?
Pleasure principle sounds less complex, which I like.
It sounds like I have to integrate less. I don't know how to do the integration of sine or cosine anymore. As we discussed,
I don't know most math. I don't know most math anymore.
I still do, and man, I don't know why some days, but then other days I use it, and I'm like, oh, that's why. That's why I still know math, because I have to use it. The reason I say it's always going to come back to utilitarian calculus is because utilitarian calculus, at its base, whether it's pleasure principle, happiness, whatever word you label it with, in the end, always comes down to who is going to be put, you know, who's going to have a positive outcome here, you know, who's going to remain neutral and not have, this isn't going to affect their life up or down, and who's going to be detrimented by an action. And that's when you start to think of, like, society as a whole, and now suddenly everybody might detriment from an action or benefit from an action. And that's, you know, that's how we always figure stuff like that out.
Okay, but now spinning back up to the original question.
All right.
Is,
yeah, what do I do?
But I guess where I was getting at the sort of utilitarian thing is, I'm not even talking about, you know, sort of society-wide utilitarian calculation, you know, taking everyone in a vacuum, you know, the total pleasure of society.
Sure.
Because my assumption about this, which I think is pretty safe, is that societally, you know, this woman, anyone else around, from you answering or not answering these emails, nothing societally will change. No, not her dumb opinions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say the only relevant, in this case, pleasure-pain calculation is, you know, yours. You know, it's a solipsistic utilitarianism in this case. So it's just simple, basically, how annoyed do you get at her dumb-ass emails? How much pleasure do you take in your smugness?
And I want to reiterate...
Which is greater?
In this hypothetical situation with this hypothetical person, the person has absolutely zero other input into my life as of now. Like, I don't get any other emails or conversations from the person at all. They are simply a source of email forwards at this point in our relationship.
So there's not even any personal...
No.
What to do?
Not at all. Sometimes there's a personal reply in this hypothetical situation, a hypothetical personal hypothetical reply.
Hypothetically, yeah.
Hypothetically. That, you know, oh, well, we'll just have to agree to disagree or some shit like that.
Right.
Which, whatever, I don't agree to disagree. But here's actually, I actually think I have a solution to this whole problem.
Uh-huh. I mean, I would lean towards cutting it off, just to give my actual answer before we go to where you're going.
All right.
I would lean towards just cutting it out.
I think my plan is that I poison the person's food and then hope that somebody else shoots them.
Okay.
You know, just get away with it. So. All right, let's take a short break and we'll be back with more I'm Trying to Think. There's more. I'm Trying to Think. Episode 33. I'm Chuck Warner. This is Dave Stern. Did you like that one a little better there, Dave? That intro?
Yeah.
Re-intro?
It was punchy.
Re-transition intro?
Yeah. I don't know. You're slowly, you gave it a good punch and you're slowly sort of letting the air out as we speak, making it sort of flaccid and unimpressive. But the intro itself was punchy.
Strong. All right. So that was I Can't Go For That by Hall & Oates.
No Can Do,
which you should know. If you don't listen to Hall & Oates, go out. Pause the podcast. Go out to a store. Buy a Hall & Oates album. Possibly a greatest hits one. Come back to your house. Listen to it. Resume the podcast. Trust me. Also, before that was The Beat, or The English Beat, depending on if you're in Britain or not. They were doing Tears of a Clown. That's an excellent cover. I like the cover. Dave, do you like that cover?
Yeah, it's a solid cover. All right, now you've run down the songs like a FM DJ. So
I like to do that. I like to let people know what the songs are. All right, Dave.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
Okay. One thing I want to talk about that... I think this is something that I first sort of started understanding a couple of years ago when I went to a Thomas Dolby show, and my sort of expectation going in was like, okay, you know, Thomas Dolby, you know, like a guy from the 80s, so this is going to be full of like, you know, because this was especially a couple of years ago when like 80s revival in music was like the big thing, like, you know, everyone was trying to be, you know, 80s post-punk bands, blah, 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 the 80s, the 80s, the 80s.
The 80s.
The 80s, yeah. So I was totally expecting the audience to be, like, really fully composed, or at least substantially composed, of just, like, a lot of sort of, you know, 20-something hipstery types. But, no, it wound up at the Thomas Dolby show. It just wound up pretty much being people who liked Thomas Dolby the first time around. And it's like, oh, sweet, you know, and are still fans of Thomas Dolby. And we're like, great, Thomas Dolby's in town. So, you know, a lot of 40s, a lot of 50s, like, and, you know, it was great. There were chairs, and you sat down, and you just watched the show, and it was a really good experience.
Yeah, I often wish that shows were like that more.
And I had a similar experience about a week and a half ago or so. I went to an Adrian Belew show. For those who don't know, he's, for about 20 years, been, like, the front man for... Actually, no, probably about 30 years now. I think he joined, you know, which again, that shows you like 20 or 30 years. That's the kind of range we're talking, you know. So he's well in his 60s now.
rocking out.
But yeah, he was a frontman for King Crimson. He played with Talking Heads. He played with Frank Zappa. He played with Dave Bowie. He's played with Nine Inch Nails. You know, this, that, and the other thing, you know. So he's been around making weird noises on his guitar.
So no matter who you are, you've heard him.
Pretty much, you've heard him
play music at some point. So yeah, but that's and that was a sit-down show too?
Yeah, it was a great show. Like, I mean, because no, there were some standing.
Were there any walkers? I mean, did people have to take?
No, no, but here's a great, because I mean, there was some, you know, standing just because the club was crowded enough. But the great thing about it is, one, you get to sit down. I mean, there were
during
a couple things that are great.
Intermission, was there bingo?
A little bit. A little bit.
B7.
But like, the great things about old people shows, you know, one, obviously sitting down, you know, there were tables, there were chairs, you know. If you got there early enough, you know, you could have a seat, you know. We sat down at a table with, you know, actually another sort of older couple who were at the table. And it was great because we had asked them because, you know, it's like, oh, you know, there's free seats here, you know, can we use these? And they were like, oh, sure, you know. And I think at one point, because, you know, we intermittently chatted with them, which was good because it was like enough chatting that it was like personable and nice, but not, but, you know, they knew when to shut up also. So that was really nice. And I think at one point, we, you know, we just, like, thanked them for, you know, letting us use the table. And the guy was just kind of, like, almost incredulous, where he's just like, oh, what? Like, would I be the guy, would I be sitting here and, you know, people all night are asking me for the table? And I'm just like, no. You know, as if that would be an insane thing to do. And I'm just like, man, you know, I feel like if I was in a lot of clubs or a lot of places, you know, asking, like, a 22-year-old... That's what would be happening.
It's possible.
I feel like that's exactly what would be happening.
So you're saying you had a good time in the court of the Bingo King.
Yes.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
That's good to know.
But here's the other thing that's great about old people shows.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Two words. It's like, you want a drink. You don't have to, like, punch through people and, like, lead with your elbows until you get to a bar.
Uh-huh.
There's cocktail waitresses.
Oh, cocktail waitresses.
Yeah.
Oh, so man, that's like a luxury.
You're sitting down, and they bring the drinks to you.
It's nice that, honestly, as a performer, it's good that he just is okay with all this. But then I thought for a second, I was like, oh, wait, he's on a stage. There are lights. He can't tell where you are.
No, no, he can't, because it's a tiny club. He sees everything. He sees it all.
He sees it all. I was, because I've been on stage before, many times, actually. And the one thing about being on stage is that few people
can't see
in the audience
a
realizes
good goddamn
you
thing.
Have
yeah.
no idea what people out there look like. I mean, I did stand up comedy, and I didn't know if people were laughing. You could hear that was about it, you know. And you don't know if people are smiling at you, if they're rolling the aisles, if they're getting bottles ready to throw at you. You don't know.
You don't know until you hear the whistle of glass in the air.
When you hear the bullet whiz by, you know, it's not going well.
Okay, so, you know, cocktail waiters. And the great thing is, you know, when you do have to go to the restroom and, you know, even when you pick your way through the standing crowd, again, it's like, you know, at a more typical, you know, rock show, it's like, you know, everyone's packed in, mm-hmm. you're jostling, it's a whole thing.
Right.
But, you know, these people, you know, even the people who are standing and, you know, are reasonably tightly crowded, you know. You know, they're probably all, you know, their backs are a little cranky, you know. They don't, it's kind of a mutual non-aggression pact thing. It's like, you know, I don't want to elbow you. You don't want to elbow me, you know. If you say excuse me, I will let you pass very,
it's,
you know, nicely.
It's different.
It's a great vibe. And so, also during the songs, people, I think, you know, maybe because when you've, you know, worked hard at your, you know, banal 8-hour job.
Which should be 6 hours, yeah.
Yeah. For long enough to, you know, afford this ticket, and, you know, you've been doing that for years, and you really know how to appreciate these things, you know. And also maybe when you're older, and, you know, maybe this is your one show, you know,
yeah.
a half year, and the music starts, what you do is shut the fuck up and listen to it.
That's pretty good.
Which is amazing.
Well, I just recall the experience for me. I used to go to shows a little more often, but I haven't been going to shows at all for quite some time. I think actually the last time I went to see anything was with you when we saw Mike Doty, and that was probably 4 years ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
I don't think I've been to a concert since then. I just don't enjoy the experience anymore, and it's because of that kind of stuff. When I was younger, and obsessively went to see They Might Be Giants, and other goofy geek bands like
President of the United States of America and the Red Elvises and stuff like that. You know, actually, the Red Elvises show was pretty cool because it was in this club where there were a lot of couches and stuff, and there was like a small dance floor, and there actually weren't that many people there, so there were just people swing dancing space. And people sitting on couches. It was awesome. So anyways, but you know, when you go see They Might Be Giants, it's just like 17-year-old kids hopped up on sugar, you know, acting like they're on amphetamines. I mean, pretty much, and hopping up and down and shit like that. And as I got older and I kind of moved from the front, you know, where I was at the stage to like slowly shuffling until I backwards. Was kind of in the back of the auditorium or club or what have you. Yeah, it's a different experience. And I enjoyed the later years a lot more. I mean, if I could make a plea for a second, that's the joy of stadium seating. Come on, just a little incline and everybody can see the show.
You know? Oh, not necessarily, because actually this is something you probably saw a little bit starting, but, you know, because the cameras were all so crappy, most people gave up, but if you haven't been to a show in the past 4 years, you are lucky enough. Hands up
with the iPhone.
Yeah, you have missed the rise of iPhone guy. Actually, this is like maybe a couple weeks, like, I don't know, a week and a half before this Adrian Blue show, I was at a Hold Steady concert, and guy in front of me. Because the thing has big, easy-to-read numbers, so yeah. I can tell you, over 300 fucking pictures with his iPhone did not, like, put the damn thing down the entire show.
What are you going to do with 300 pictures of...
I don't know! It was insane. You know, it was insane. But I can tell you, you know who's not doing that?
No. Old people.
Yep.
They don't have an iPhone.
Middle-aged people? No, they do. No, because remember, everyone has iPhones now.
Oh, do they?
But you know what? But old people, they know they don't need 300 pictures
the guy. A couple weeks ago, I went to see Michael Showalter and Michael Ian Black perform, and tons of camera phone pictures by all the people around, like all the people in the tent, which it was in a tent, but regardless, just, you know, why? What do you take a picture? It's a comedy show. It's not even... There's not really visual comedy. It's just a comedy show. The jokes don't go through the phone. They don't save on the phone. I don't get it.
Unless you're taking video, but...
And I mean, if you want to see pictures of, like, these two guys, they're all over the internet.
Yeah, and also they have... Oh, then now here what we have is kind of a problem of the commons. You get the freeloader problem.
Right.
Is... If everyone suddenly decided to not be a gigantic dickbag and, you know, ruin other people's nights by taking all your pictures, if everyone made that decision to be a decent human being, because you can just look at pictures on the internet.
Yeah.
Then there wouldn't be pictures on the
internet. There would still be pictures on the internet, because that's what publicists do.
Okay, yeah, there would be the official pictures.
Yeah.
But you want to look at real shit.
I don't know about that.
I think that's
part of it. And this is different, I think, but... sometime in 1998, I want to say, I don't know, I saw the MIB Giants and I worked security because it was at the college where I was attending and helping out with,
right.
The activities board activities. So anyways, I was working security. I was sitting right on the front of the stage, you know, keeping people away from the stage, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, I have recordings that somebody bootlegged from that show. And those are the only bootlegs I have of songs that, you know, that you can get on an album easily. And it's because I was at the show, but I think that's a little different. Don't you think that's a little different? Because music is what they do. If it was an art show, maybe pictures would be the appropriate medium, but for preserving that memory. I mean, I have tons of bootleg live stuff that is all pretty much covers or songs that, you know...
I don't know. I feel like
maybe done differently or something.
Maybe this because this is something that I've decided I'm very comfortable with.
All right.
And I think, hold on, sorry.
Uh oh. Oh man.
Yeah. Had to get a cough out there.
Go for it.
I think a lot of people increasingly I don't know, they must be less comfortable with this because they're taking, you know, 300 pictures of a damn concert.
They need 300 pictures.
And that's, I'm comfortable letting memories fade into memory.
Yeah, that too.
Like,
but I think
I'm okay with experiencing a thing, enjoying it at that time, and remembering it fondly, even if I don't have the precise mental image also, of what it was.
You have to recall that there's basically a kind of practice or idea that people have where, for instance, it's an iPhone, and they're like, well, it can take like 480 pictures, or like actually probably a lot more. I don't even want to think about how many pictures the iPhone could take before filling its memory, but a lot of pictures. So whatever, I'll take all the pictures. I mean, what's it gonna? It's gonna be like, you know, 8 megs of data. I mean, he's gonna put it on his computer, and it's gonna take up almost zero space. So I mean, people also have this like, well, I can do this, so I might as well do it with it.
Yeah, that's an opinion.
That's an idea that people have about technology. Which is fine. I mean, it was the same thing with, like, when I was a kid, you know, like, if you did a play or a school musical or something, you know, or any kind of performance or anything, your parents would record it, you know, because VHS or, you know, camcorder things were the rage. So, you know, you had this big honking thing and, you know, you were a kid a little later than me, so you don't probably remember quite as well the VHS camcorder that was basically, I mean, it's heavier than any laptop I own now. You know, it's like,
no, I remember those guys. I still have a couple. There's at least one or two VHS tapes somewhere lying around of me in a play.
Yeah. So know? The thing is, I know what you're talking about. I'm 31 years old, Dave. I did some stuff. You know, maybe let's be generous. Let's say I did something when I was 16 that my parents recorded 15 years ago. Have not watched it.
Well, why would you?
Don't intend to watch.
No one
it.
Wants to.
Yeah, why would I watch it again? Why would I show it to anyone? Hey, here is what I did when I really wasn't that good at anything. And I'm still not that good at anything, but listen to the podcast. You know, that's basically my life now, is trying to get people to listen to a podcast, and I'm not any better than I was when I was 15 in a stupid play. So how do I justify that?
Man, this suddenly took a turn towards anti-promotion.
Actually, I just wanted to note, we have not gotten any more fans on Facebook, and we told you motherfuckers, I am getting into strong language now, and rattling the microphone.
Yeah, shaking up the microphone.
Listen, we told you, go out, make people listen, and become fans. All right, we told you that 2 weeks ago. Now, I know none of you have listened to that show yet, okay? I know you're not listening to this show, but goddammit, get people to listen to the show. You're our only hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's my little promotion bit, yeah.
Man, I feel like I'm not sure if berating is the way to go. I'm really not sure.
Well, what am I supposed to do, Dave? What attitude am I supposed to have? Am I supposed to be upset that nobody's becoming a fan? I don't want to really be upset. Am I supposed to plead and beg? That's definitely not entering into it. I don't know that I have a lot of other, you know, options. I gotta yell, or I gotta beg. I'm not paying people. I'm not begging. So I'm yelling. I could give them, I mean, if I could come up with a logical or reasonable argument that would prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that you should go out and tell people to listen to I'm Trying to Think and send them links to the podcast, I would.
We could try putting out a consistently high quality product.
We do put out a consistently quality product. The quality is consistent. The quality of this show and the quality of last show are consistent. It's a consistent podcast. And it has been consistent for many, many weeks now.
There's a word conspicuous in its absence.
We have been consistent for almost a year now.
I see that thing you did.
We've been consistently doing this podcast.
you tried to slip that by. Oh, man. I hope whatever technical thing is happening just in the background, it seems like it just fixed itself. But I hope the listener caught that, because that's brilliant timing for that to happen.
Yeah,
while we're talking about our consistent quality, to just hear a little
our
sound.
Our quality
thing
is consistent. It is precise. I'll say that. It is precisely, the quality of this podcast is precisely the quality of previous podcasts. So I think that's deserving of praise.
Man,
recognition.
You really divorced this entirely from the concept of, like, I started, I had an adjective modifying the word quality. I noticed you took that out quick.
There's quality. I'm saying there's a quality to the podcast. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just saying the quality of the podcast is a quality that it has.
Thank you, Aristotle.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, then. So that's settled. Okay? Then we could just end episode 33. We're back in 2 weeks. Episode 34. The quality will remain the same. And if that's a quality that you like, then you can count on us. That's all I'm saying.
I'm trying to think. A dependable podcast.
A dependable podcast. It's quality week in and week out. There's a quality week in and week out. All right.
I'm trying to think. A podcast with properties and qualities.
Properties and precision and consistency. Those are our mainstays here.
Those are our properties and qualities.
That's how we get in here every 2 weeks and work. That's the motto. That's the banner that we see every time we walk into the studio. Consistency.
And what was the other thing? Precision?
Precision, yeah. Reliability. We could say reliability, too. I would call this reliable. All right. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 34. We hope you've enjoyed episode 33. If you haven't, it's free. What do you got to say? Seriously. All right. Well, we'll leave you with some hit music. Dave, do you have anything to say before we get out of here?
Huh? No, we've got qualities. We've got properties.
Properties,
we
yeah.
have... We are objects.
There are two of us. Right about now. I don't want to allude to anything. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
I see where you're going with this.
With more I'm Trying to Think. Hit it!
Consistency. Predictability.